The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to the latest shift of the Ice Time podcast here at buffalonews.com. I'm news sports columnist Mike Harrington, joined as always by Sabres beat reporter Rachel Lindsay. On the road today in Salt Lake City, Utah, the Sabres playing the Utah Mammoth Wednesday night. You'll know the result of that game by the time you watch this, but there's plenty more to talk about on this road trip. Rachel, just before we move on to the Colorado game, just a quick thought of an impression of your trip to Salt Lake City and the practice facility and the heightened interest in hockey we see in Utah.
Well, it's really a neat area, Salt Lake City. It's probably one of my favorite road trips. This is my first time going to Salt Lake City for hockey. I came here about 10 years ago to cover the University of Michigan-Utah football game at Rice-Eccles Stadium, which is right down the street from where I'm staying. And the area itself is beautiful. You're right up against the Wasatch Range. It's about 55 degrees. Because it's so dry, it feels like it's 70. The practice facility, the New Mammoth's new facility, where the Sabres practice on Tuesday, is about 20 minutes south of town. It's in an old mall. It's a former Macy's that's been repurposed into a hockey and ice facility. There are two sheets. There's Utah Mammoth branding everywhere. It's going to house youth hockey, figure skating, the Mammoth headquarters. And yesterday we got a treat because when I was walking into the building, you go through a very nondescript side door because the main entrance is still under construction at this facility in Sandy. Going to side door, and who do I follow in but the newest NHL mascot, Tusky, the big blue mammoth that was there for a birthday party as well, too. I also met Jazz Bear, the Utah Jazz's mascot. He was locked out of his den in the Delta Center this afternoon as I was leaving the arena. So if you look at the picture on my Instagram, there are pictures of Tusky, and there's a picture of me with Ursa Major. But the one thing that's really surprised me is just the enthusiasm that new Mammoth fans has. As we know, the Mammoth moved to Utah from Arizona. They were the Utah Hockey Club last year. They're the former Arizona Coyotes, former Phoenix Coyote, former Winnipeg Jets. And it is amazing the enthusiasm people have for this team, for this product, for the NHL. And even years ago, I always thought Utah wouldn't be a bad hockey market. They had the Grizzlies, who were a minor league team there for years. I want to say maybe they were Calgary's farm team at one point. But even just looking at my Twitter feed, I'm tweeting pictures and updates from the Sabres practice yesterday. The number of people who have followed along, who, you know, are reading our work from Utah, thank you all for reading and following along. We appreciate it. It's incredible. And I know you were out here last year as well, too. What did you think of the area on the first NHL season for Utah?
We had the same thing, a tremendous amount of interest in what was going on out in Utah. Excuse me, the Sabres practiced in the U.S. Olympic Speed Skating Oval, which was the temporary practice home of the Utah Hockey Club last year. Just, it was something new, and people wanted to know what the scene was like, what the arena was like. It's a great hockey market. It's really a good boost for the league. Mm-hmm. But here we are. You're going to be going, as people watch us, to another great hockey market that has done a lot of winning in recent years. The Sabres Thursday night will be at Ball Arena in Denver playing the Colorado Avalanche, a team that has really been a thorn in their side in recent years. I think it's 11 out of the last 13 the Avalanche have won against Buffalo, including a 3-1 win in KeyBank Center in October. And we know about the two comebacks last year. The Avalanche really ruined the Sabres season, wiping out 4-0 and 3-0 deficits. But Rachel, Nathan MacKinnon is just on an absolute heater here. He had 9 points in two games over the weekend, was the NHL's first star of the week. How in the world, on a back-to-back, are the Sabres going to deal with the Colorado Avalanche Thursday night in Denver?
The road is not going to get easier for the Sabres. They have yet to win a nope. game on the road this season. I think that's what they've got to do first, just win one game on the road. You know, Nathan MacKinnon is just a force. You know, I think of him not just the Colorado Avalanche, not just as a Stanley Cup winner, but he's Sidney Crosby's pal, and the Sidney Crosby magic is rubbing off on Nathan MacKinnon. We saw him earlier this season when he came to Buffalo, and he was just a powerhouse. You know, you can't give him open space or he will exploit it and burn your team. You know, and the thing about the Sabres is, in order not just to contain Nathan MacKinnon, but to contain any other team on the road, they've got to put together a 60-minute effort, or at least two cases, you know, 65 minutes if you count the overtime losses at Toronto and Boston. It's not just about shutting down one player, because even with Nathan MacKinnon being so strong, if you try to contain him, there's still Kel McCarr who's going to come in off the defense and drive in and be like Paul Coffey or Ray Bourque Jr., or, you know, of this generation or whatnot as well, too. But the Sabres have to get through Utah first. They have to get that first win. Colorado would truly be an upset if they were to pull that off as well, too. But I don't think it's so much about containing Colorado as it is establishing the Sabres' own game, which hasn't been easy lately.
Well, and it's going to be difficult on the road to get the matchups you want to establish that kind of game. And that's what really makes it difficult against the Avalanche. Gabriel Landeskog, the captain, just got his first regular season goal since 2022 the other night against Anaheim. Scott Wedgwood, who, you know, kind of confounded the Sabres last year and this year is going to be out. Mackenzie Blackwood is starting the game Thursday night in goal. I don't know if Wedgwood is even healthy enough to back up. He was banged up in their win over Anaheim, but the Avalanche come into that game 11-1-5. So the Sabres really are going to be up against it to try to get a point. The road trip will wrap up Saturday in Detroit. I'll be at that one, and that's a key game in the Atlantic Division, but it brings us to our next topic, which is really important.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
It's really important for this entire road trip, this entire season. This team is so banged up injury-wise. And then we get the news at practice. Yuri Kulik is going to be out indefinitely, significant amount of time with a blood clot issue. And we just saw Philip Hallander of the Pittsburgh Penguins announced that he had a blood clot in his leg, and they said his timetable was going to be 3 months. Mm-hmm. So that's what we could be looking at for the Buffalo Sabres. So you did a story on Wednesday in Utah about where the Buffalo Sabres stand down the middle right now. Mm-hmm. What is going to be the at this point, the initial configuration of the centers in this team with Josh Norris out, with Yuri Kulik out, they have got holes in the middle.
They do. And that's one of the things I asked Lindy Ruff. I said, Lindy, what is your contingency plan at center? And he kind of went, well, you know, this is what we're going to have. They've got Ryan McLeod centering the top line with Alex Tuch and Tage Thompson. Tyson Kozak, who just came back from an injury as well, centering the second line with Jordan Greenway and Josh Stone. Noah Ostlund centering the third line with Isak Rosén and Jack Quinn. Peyton Krebs centering the fourth line with Beck Malenstein and Josh Dunn. I mean, it's not exactly a murderer's row there, you know, but it's also not exactly productive either. You know, one of the things Lindy talked about was what he wants out of his centers. Multiple responsibilities. Contribute offensively and defensively. Be a two-way player. Take the face off, score goals, create scoring chances, not just for you, but for other teams. And one of the things that Lindy brought up that really resonated with me, because I'm a fan of the face off, he says, you know, you want to be that key guy when you're taking D-zone face offs, O-zone face offs. We can win the draws. And he says something that I learned years ago from Dylan Hunter, the son of former Washington Capitals player and coach Dale Hunter. You win the face off, you start with this puck. 60% of the time, you're going to have them chasing you around. If we don't have it, we've got to chase them around. And so I dug up this stat yesterday as I watched the Sabres practicing faceoffs at the Mammoth practice facility. Sabres are 32nd in the NHL in faceoff win percentage at 42.9%.
And have been for multiple weeks.
Yeah.
Multiple weeks.
And nothing's changing. Of the four centers who we see out there at practice today, here's their faceoff percentages. You know, it's Tyson Kozak, 47.6%. Ryan McLeod, 41.8%. Ostlund, 30%. Krebs, 46.7%. This is where the centers really miss Josh Norris, a guy who was brought in to be the top line center and to be the faceoff guy. That, you know, that's a big thing. They're not getting puck possession off that as well, too. And we also asked each other, you know, and I know the fans and other reporters have asked this as well, are the Sabres going to make a trade? What are they going to do? They can't call anybody else because they've got five players on injured reserve right now. They can't rush Josh Norris back onto the ice. I mean, he's, you know, a trade seems like it would be the most likely outcome to help kind of solve this problem, be the most practical.
Well, here's,
not just to plug holes, but to shake up a team with one win in the last seven games.
Here's the issue. It's just, let's not overanalyze this. I love Tyson Kozak. He is a nose to the grindstone player. He is an NHL player. He does not belong in Rochester anymore. If Tyson Kozak is your second line center, you are in big trouble. Now, they are going to have to find some outside help here. I think that antenna was triggered by the Jiří Kulík situation.
Yes.
If he's going to be out 3 months, you cannot possibly continue to exist without Norris and McLeod. Without Norris and Kulík. I'm sorry, McLeod right now really is your number one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do we trust Kevin Adams to do that? Probably not. Is it realistic for Kevin Adams to do that? It's the middle of November. Teams aren't trading. Teams don't have needs. Teams aren't looking to get guys from Buffalo. I don't know what they do here, but they're out of guys to call up from Rochester. They need to do something about getting somebody down the middle here because you've got two long-term injuries. They're in a desperate strait at center, and I've never seen this before to this extent. And ultimately, you know, it may be the excuse that saves Kevin Adams for a while, maybe not after the season, but for a while. You take out the top two centers from any team. You take out the number one goalie, the perceived number one goalie, the starter camp. You take out the number one defenseman with Dahlin on leave in Sweden. Kesselring missed a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Any team would struggle. Any team would suffer. But right now, we learned last year, Kevin Adams didn't do anything during the 13-game winless streak. And I think going forward, will Kevin Adams do something with this crisis at center is a big topic going forward.
It is, you know, the Sabres have no choice at this point to do something. It's not an overhaul. But the other question I asked was, who's out there who could be a stopgap position? Maybe someone to bring in and stir things up a little bit. And here's the other issue that crossed my mind this morning. Who wants to come to Buffalo? I'm not saying this in a derogatory sense, even though recent history and the current record of the team speaks for itself.
But everybody doesn't have a no trade clause.
Yeah,
everybody doesn't have a no trade clause.
Who has Buffalo in their no trade clauses in their contracts? And that's an invisible variable here.
Right, but only experienced heavy big name guys have those no trade clauses. Not everybody does. It's really more of an issue at the deadline to me. But you're right. The one problem Kevin Adams has is trading for somebody who doesn't have the no trade clause. And exactly your point, who is sore about getting traded to Buffalo and doesn't want to be here. That's another issue that they have to deal with. You're 100% right. And that's a problem of constant losing year after year, creating a bad culture and creating a lot of negativity.
The Jiří Kulík thing as well. And I was even thinking, should we do some of this? The blood clot issue. It's they're no joke. I know Kulík hasn't had a consistent year, but I mean, blood clots can be life-threatening. You know, I have zero medical expertise. I am not a doctor. I took bio for dummies in my little liberal arts college. I was not a pre-med major at all. But, you know, there's information that's accessible. The Cleveland Clinic, Johns Hopkins, the Mayo Clinic have sites that outline medical issues. And blood clots, as, you know, the Mayo Clinic described, are these gel-like clumps of blood form in the veins. They don't dissolve. And they have many causes for why someone, even a young, healthy guy like Jiří Kulík, would have it. There could be hereditary issues. You could be taking medication that clots your blood. Smoking and tobacco usage factors into it, like using chewing tobacco or those little Zyn packets that are real popular with the young kids. You know, there could be, you know, blood cancer. And I'll say it's on a personal note. My father was diagnosed with blood clots years ago, and he still has to monitor the medications he takes. You know, if there's a cut, you know, you have to go to a wound care center if it doesn't scab over and heal. Bruising even, you know, there's a lot of monitoring. The system becomes very fragile on blood thinner. So from what I read, someone who's diagnosed with a blood clot disorder, they have to be monitored for weeks and weeks just to kind of stabilize themselves, for lack of a better word. So Jiří Kulík, this isn't 2 weeks out of the lineups and he'll be fine. This is a lifetime of monitoring for him and setting him up on a medical process, for lack of a better word, that's going to help him stabilize and manage this condition. And it is a condition.
Now, here's another point. We've spent a lot of time in the centers. Jason Zucker, the veteran winger of this club continues to be out. They've told us that he, you know, has had a very serious viral illness. Lindy Ruff said on the radio the other day he's lost 8 or 9 pounds, hasn't been able to keep solid food down. So that's another bizarre injury, so to speak. It's really not an injury, obviously. A bizarre happenstance to this club really has caused an issue with the lines, because Zucker's certainly a guy who can be in your top six and on your number one power play. Mm-hmm. And it's a big absence in the locker room. So I just want to get your thought quickly before we move on here about Jason Zucker's absence. Really hasn't been talked about enough, I don't think. And
no.
he appears to be out. It's certainly going to be out the rest of this road trip, and we'll see if he comes home next, if he shows up next week when they come home.
Next week, or, you know, another thing, the WGR interview earlier, it was on the radio that they said he's lost, 9-10 pounds, he couldn't eat solid foods. Don't expect Jason Zucker just to jump back on the ice and be ready to go either.
No.
When you get that kind of illness where you lose weight, where you're not having proper nutrition, when, you know, you can't do, even if you can't even do the chicken soup and crackers thing as well, too. I mean, and ginger ale, aren't those like supposed to be the mother's cures and whatnot? You know,
right.
He's probably lost strength as well, too. The absence of Jason Zucker is big because he provides that net front zip. He's a guy who wants to not just create traffic, but pick up the rebounds in front of the net and kind of get in the face of the goalie a little bit. He's got that little zip in front of the net as well, too. He's an older player, so he brings a lot of perspective to the locker room as well, too. And we were really starting to see him find his fit. He's a very versatile player. You can plug him in at any of those four, left wing positions as well, too. So, again, don't expect Jason Zucker just to jump back into the lineup. They've got to kind of recondition him as well. I imagine, that he's got some weakness as well, too, physical weakness.
All right, let's move on here, Rachel. And I'm looking up, okay? What I'm doing is that's what the Sabres are doing to the entire Eastern Conference. They're looking up because they're in last place. But that doesn't mean we're bereft of stories and tales in the Eastern Conference at all. First of all, I probably want to offer a standing ovation to the New York Rangers for actually winning a game at home.
They actually won a home game, yes.
They won a home game over the Nashville Predators. The Rangers are the first team in NHL history to win 7 road games before they win their first home game. They finally scored a bunch of goals against Nashville. The interesting part is, as we sit here in the middle of November, the Rangers got shut out again at home last week by the Islanders. They continue to have no goals at home for the season against the Eastern Conference. All of their goals at home are against San Jose, Minnesota, and Nashville. So they still have to score against the East at some point, but they do have a win. The Rangers, as I look here, going into this, when the Sabres were going to Utah, oddly enough, were tied for the last playoff spot. They were out of it based on tiebreakers. But in your mind, what have been a couple of the big surprises in the Eastern Conference so far? The Sabres, are surprised to be last. But what, in a positive vein for some of these teams, who has surprised you to this point?
I've got two teams. The team I grew up watching, the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's as if Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, they drink from the eternal fountain of youth. They've gotten yet another life. They're competitive. They were atop the NHL at one point. They're competitive even without Ricard Raquel, who, by the way, the kids believe he has a very popular uniform number. As kids, if you know. And even with the loss of Philip Hollander to blood clots, you brought him up earlier as well. The Penguins are still finding ways to be competitive. And they've got guys, another one, Justin Brazeau, who was an early season surprise. He's injured now as well. The Pittsburghs hit a bit of a skid lately. They've lost 6 out of their last 10 games as well. And not kind of hitting the identity crisis, but again, it's an ebb and flow season. I want to see how they're going to rebound from this little bit of a skid lately. I think it was again, they're playing Los Angeles. It was 2-1 when I turned it off and they lost to Los Angeles. The other team that I really like in the East, teams that surprise, the Montreal Canadiens. This team is such a reflection of their coach, Martin St. Louis, Tampa Bay Lightning great. They're fast, they're smart, they're spunky, they're going to get in your face. They're a team that embodies the coach. You and I talked about before how Columbus is a team like that with Dean Evason, their coach, but they're not the Canadiens. The Canadiens have all this young talent. They've got a goalie, Jakub Dobish, who from Czechia, played at Ohio State. He is fourth in the NHL right now with a 2.25 goals against average. He's 6-0-1. They've also got Lane Hutson, you know, I think the Calder Trophy winner. Outstanding young defenseman. They're getting points. They've got him in 8 of their last 10 games. It's a team that, you know, I don't think they're going to run out of gas. I think they're going to play more and more consistent. And they're doing it also without Patrick Laine, who's, you know, on the shelf for a while as well, too.
Which might be addition by subtraction.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that really a shelf thing as well, too? One more question about the Rangers. When's Chris Drury going to pull off a trade or make a shakeup with this team that's Beauty and the Beast?
I think the Rangers simply think it's a fluke because they have 7 road wins. I just think they think it's a mental block, and they have the team that can win. And once they get a win, maybe they'll get going. But I think they literally think this streak of non-scoring is a fluke. And some of the analytics might say that. But I don't think a fluke it lasts 6 games like it did. But they may think that with all the road wins. I didn't mean to be shaking my head through your Montreal answer, but just for the record, I wanted to explain that. I just don't. We saw Montreal become a real team that night last December where they blew the Sabres out the day after Terry Pegula visited. Terry Pegula may have changed the entire fortune of the Montreal Canadiens because that's the game that really is the line
of
the stand.
So.
Yeah, he changed the fortunes of the wrong team. I don't believe in the Montreal Canadiens.
We're going to agree to disagree on this.
Yeah, I think great young talent. I think Nick Suzuki's having an unbelievable year. But I don't know. I'm not impressed. And one thing about the Montreal Canadiens is they beat the Sabres like a drum. One of the reasons they made the playoffs last year was they went 4-0 against Buffalo. And you watch them against other teams, and they just, they skate around, they score, but I just don't think they have the experience to do much in the playoffs once they get there. They have young goalies. They have great young players. They're still, to me, a team 2 or 3 years down the road, but here we are right now, and they're, the last I looked, they're a point out of the lead in the Eastern Conference, so my opinion sounds kind of goofy based on where they are. But here's the other one I don't believe in, and sometimes I don't believe in these top teams. I don't believe for a second, even less than Montreal, I don't believe for a second in the Boston Bruins.
What in
the world is up with them?
We'll agree
they
on that.
They started 3-0, and they lose 6 in a row, and you think, well, that's who they are. They're supposed to be terrible. And now they've won 7 in a row. I don't understand. I know McAvoy's there. I know Pasternak's there. I know Swayman's there. But what do you think of the Boston Bruins? They beat the Sabres twice. Again, teams beating Buffalo get a little boost. But come on, 7 in a row? I mean, somebody take this team out.
I haven't had a chance to look at Boston's wins. Obviously, they've got the 2 wins against the Sabres. But you bring up a good point, how they're streaky. That's the question I have about the Boston Bruins. When are they going to hit the streak that either lifts their fortunes or sinks them down? I always say this, it's an ebb and flow league. I always use the line that Bob Airy said to me years ago. He said, you lose 5 or 6 in a row in November, you could get your head handed to you in April. I wonder if that's going to be what happens with the Boston Bruins. If they remain streaky. We've got about David Pasternak as well, too. The talent is there, but the consistency is not. It's very up and down. And I'm sorry, I'm talking with my hands, but I'm doing the graph here as well, too. The other team that I have a question about, Toronto. Their problems were hidden. They can thank the Blue Jays for nobody paying attention to them during most of October. The Blue Jays covered for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And another team is just inconsistent. They've got goaltending issues. If Joseph Woll is about to come back up. He's in the conditioning stint with the Marlies. It's like a merry-go-round. We saw Caden Primo play against Buffalo. They've had the 3-goalie problem as well, too. The core 4, done. Now, and even when we were there a few weeks ago for the home-and-home series against Buffalo, it was very noticeable that Craig Berube's team had problems. You know, now they face, a short-term future without Austin Matthews after he was hit by, you know, Nikita Zadorov, the Bruins. You know, did you see the hit? Zadorov went in as Matthews' back was turned and his head had just come up after he played the puck on the far boards.
And good on Max Domi for answering that a few minutes later.
Okay. See, I didn't see that part. I didn't get to watch the game last night, but at least someone stuck up for the superstar. You need to do that. And I read today that Craig Berube said it might be too early to address the severity of Matthews' injury and the timeline of for his return. I mean, that's your marquee player. That's your potential Olympian there as well, too. And it, you have to wonder, you know, I mean, the Leafs are like a soap opera sometimes. You have to wonder, you know, what's going to be the storyline this week as well, too. I don't think there's internal fighting.
Let me take it back.
I spoke too soon. I thought about, you know, Stolarz's his comments a few weeks ago. Again,
exactly.
Every different day is a soap opera as well, too. they just want to make you redirect so that you're not looking at the problem at hand here. And they have the help of the Blue Jays. And that's what I want to see. Are the Leafs going to stabilize? Or are they going to thrive in their own internal chaos?
There's a Twitter feed out there that is keeping track of Stolarz's stats since his ripping the team, and Stolarz is at about 870 and over 4.00 goals against since his rant.
I thought you were going to there was a Twitter feed with Stolarz's rants. Would follow that. Someone needs to create.
It's an interesting one. You know, obviously we've seen Florida's injuries, but to me, you're right. The Leafs and really Buffalo are two of the biggest disappointments in the Eastern Conference. Now, next week, we'll both end up back in Buffalo at some point. I'm going to Detroit. Rachel will be coming back from Colorado. And next week, we're going to have coverage of four home games. The Sabres have a four-game week at home, Edmonton, Calgary, Chicago, Carolina. That's not a great schedule. The beginning and end of that is a tough one.
Calgary might be the empty calorie game the Sabres need. They're just 10 points in the NHL. They've been hit by injuries as well. As soon as I saw Zane Parayk was out, I said, well, there goes my Calder Trophy pick. So,
And the other thing is St. Louis was an empty calorie game. We saw how that turned out.
Yeah, I mean, and Buffalo could be the empty calorie game for some of these teams as well, too. Thank you to Ellie Friedman, by the way, for coining that term. I love that. I use that all the time now. But, then they've got Connor McDavid coming to town. They've got, you know, Bedard coming to town as well. They've got Sebastian Aho, who just eats the Sabres for lunch sometime. He's coming to town as well, too.
Breakfast,
the Sabres
lunch,
get
dinner.
To sleep. Yeah, they get to sleep in their own bed, but, you know, they gotta pack their weapons and use them forcefully just to survive some of these teams.
Well, Rachel needs to navigate the skies back from Colorado. Good luck with that, the way things are going in the airlines, Rachel. I'll be in the car going to Detroit. And then, like I say, next week, it's a big week at home with four games. And we're really going to see where this team is going to go here, maybe for the rest of the season in these next five or six games. It's going to dictate a lot of how things are moving. And are they going to make a deal? Are they going to make some moves in the front office? Who knows what might happen here? So follow all the coverage of As the Sabres Turn in the Buffalo News and BuffaloNews.com. For Rachel Lindsay, this is Mike Harrington. Thanks for watching.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at ExpressWindowsInc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.